This week's set speaks of the origins of the Jewish people. Chapter 11 finished with, chapter 11, with a bankrupted civilization. They declared chapter 11. And then we start out again with Vayema Hashem al Avram, Lech Lecha Me'atzecha. Now, like the Sephorna explains, that God had tried with the sons of man in general to find amongst them someone who would be suited to fulfill his purpose in creation. And after Adam had failed, then son Cain, with Cain's descendants, ended up with the flood, and then started out the descendants of Shase, and they ended up with Noach and Avram. But before that, you had the Dor HaFloga, where the HaFloga took place of dispersion. So after these events, Hashem had chosen one individual, Avram. Now it is very important to get, we discussed in great detail last week, the Malbim's interpretation of the age and what took place. Now Avram at this time was in his 50s, and he had no opportunity. Shem also was still living, but they couldn't influence the people as a whole. So they remained, and now God had designated them to follow through. It's just as an addendum to last week, I wanted to draw your attention to one point. Sometimes we find solace in that. The Adam HaRishon lived 900 and some years. Now his grandchildren, when he was 250 years old, 300 years, he was a young man, if you take a third of his life. Now his grandchild was Enosh, literally the grandchild. In his day, they began to worship idolatry. Now, of course, the idolatry that they worshipped, the Ramban says, was a certain pluralistic type of a belief, meaning there was God, it started out with God in the heavens, God in the suns. But when you think into it, that here you had Adam HaRishon, who was created by God, and he was placed in Gan Eden, and he was still a vibrant person, you know, he told him the history of what happened to him. So you would think that the grandchildren would at least believe in God. It was so close to creation. Yet it seems that he wasn't able to channel them and to control them. And this Aveda Zora, all right, it was a very strong Aveda Zora, but I mean there was a strong temptation. But it spread out and it encompassed and enveloped man and culminated by the Nasa Lonu Shame of the Dor HaFloga, like we said last week, put God aside. Nasa Lonu Shem, we're going to build up for us a name. Now, this is how far it could go, and sometimes you wonder, you know, why one generation or two generations later, it seems to be from the nicest families and so on. What happened? But when you go back from Adam HaRishon, you say, of course, Avram had Esav, yeah, but this was even more. Here was Adam who was put in Gan Eden by God and spoke to him in the beginning of creation. And when he was a young man, yet 250 years later, that's what happened. So this starts out with Hashem saying to Avram. Avram, as we said, was living with these people. He was living in the Bovel area. And now God had chosen him to be the leader. So he told him, Lech Lecha, go out of your land, from your country, your birthplace, and from your father's house, to the land that I show you. Now, Hirsch notes that if you look at the Tamim, it seems that there is a pause after the word from your father's house, as if that would be a statement of its own. One would think that that's not the sentence. The sentence concludes, Elo Oretz Asher Areka, to the land that I show you. So why is there a pause after Beis Avicha? So he says this is a theme of its own. The idea was that God said that Avram has to leave all of these influences. That's the first step. Now, where is he going to go? Elo Oretz Asher Areka. But Lech Lecha is a self-contained phrase and directive, because as long as he's with that in that environment, it will have an impact upon him. And as Hirsch explains, one would think that it should first leave your father's house, then your land, where you're at now, your country, then your birthplace. Because you first leave the smaller area, and then you go to the state, and then you leave your nation. But it seems in the Pasuk it says, no, Lech Lecha Me'artecha U'Miladetecha Umibeis Avicha, Me'atzcha, where you're at now, Me'latzcha, where you're born, Umibeis Avicha. What does he mean? So therefore, Hirsch says the idea is shed yourself from the various influences that they have upon you. And lech lecha, meaning leave your fatherland, leave your birthplace, leave your paternal home, and stay in isolation. Because you're leaving, he says, man who had the slogan of Naseh Lanu Shem, and you're going to serve the true God. Now, he says not that Judaism goes against the idea of community. He says, contrary, everything is considered the highest by the majority. And the majority is very important in every community, but they have to be representative, he says, of that which is holy. And is it a presumption that such is the case? He says that Judaism, too, values attachment to a community as being supremely important. Now, this is an important lesson for everybody. You know, you want to be like the community. Nevertheless, he says, the head of Judaism, to Avram, the words were, lech lecha, go for yourself. Stand as being higher still. Nobody may say, I am good and honest as everybody else, as is a fashion, he writes today. But lech lecha, go for yourself. We consider it important to be part of a community because we say, k'nei lecha chaver, find a friend, find an associate. But at the same time, you have to be prepared to rise above that level. And lech lecha, this is what Hirsch emphasizes in the first passage. The Malbim also says the same idea in the lech lecha. The Malbim says that God said to him, because he says a man acquires personal qualities and behavior traits from the land, its composition, its location, the city, his birthplace. So Hashem's decree was that Avram's physical departure would coincide with the change of environment. He should become separated from the effects of the land, from etc. Now he says the same point, it begins from your land. For it is easier to forget one's country of origin than it is to forget one's birthplace. And to forget one's family or father's house is hardest of all. So therefore, but not only was Avram Avinu supposed to leave Arzecha or Meladetecha, but he was also supposed to leave totally Beis Avicha. What does this mean, Beis Avicha? Like we know when a person converts. When a person converts, he has to, in a sense, sever himself from his family. It's not enough, we'll say, that he'll leave the country of his beginning, or he'll leave even his city, but he'll have a relationship, we'll say, with the Beis Avicha. But even that is governed al pi halacha. I mean, you are allowed to under certain circumstances in certain ways. But here we find the Beis Avicha as God demanding from Avram the total separation. And that's why, really, Avram Avinu, in a sense, does not have a father. I mean, Terach was his father, but when you trace back the genealogy, you always stop by Avram. You don't go back to Avram. Why? Because physically, it could very well be that Terach was his father. But for a person to be the source of the continuation, we'll say, of the spiritual life of Avram, of the character of Avram, in that sense, it didn't trace itself back to Terach at all. That's why you could appreciate a convert, because when a convert converts itself, the idea is that his every outlook in life, an entire being, has to be governed, we'll say, by Tayag Mitzvahs, no longer by the seven Mitzvahs. So in a sense, the relationship, the source of his strength, the source of his spiritual life no longer has any hiskashrus, any connection to the original physical parents that he had. We have a similar expression later when it speaks about in the further chapter. It says Avram Avinu, you know, the story that's mentioned later, Avram waged battle against the four kings. Four kings who were world leaders, and they suppressed the countries and the nations that were living in Canaan. And Lot, we know, was living there, and Lot was captured, and then Avram waged battle against them, and he came back victorious, and he often came to Yerushalayim. So when Avram comes back to Yerushalayim, it says that the Melech of Sdom, which we know is in Israel, went out to greet Avram after he had defeated these tyrants in battle.
And it says, and Malchizedek Melech Sholem, Malchizedek the king of Sholem. Now this king of Sholem, what is Sholem? Sholem is Yerushalayim. Malchizedek is the king who's righteous and just. Malchizedek Melech Sholem. Who was this? This was Shem. Shem, the son of Noah, who in a sense was the progenitor of Avram Avinu. Yet, he was also, it says, describes him, Behu Kohen Lekeil Elyon. He was a priest of the Most High God. And he blessed Avram, and he said, blessed is Avram to the Most High God, the owner of heaven and earth. And blessed is the Most High God who has abandoned thine enemies to thy hands. And Avram gave him tithe, because he was a religious leader, a priest, and Avram gave him tithe. So then Avram, we said that Malchizedek believed in monotheism. Malchizedek Melech Sholem, Shem ben Noach. He was the priest. We know he had a yeshiva, which the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov actually went to study there. It was a yeshiva where they taught the monotheistic belief in God. Yet it seems that Malchizedek did not merit to be the progenitor of Klal Yisrael, right? Everybody came from Shem, so why doesn't Avram go back to Shem, right? Skip a few chapters in between and draw your lineage or your heritage back from Shem. So obviously we see that Avram Avinu had a different conception of God, which was a very valid conception and separated him from Malchizedek to a great degree. Not that Malchizedek had a distorted view of monotheism, but he didn't. His view of monotheism did not go as far as Avram Avinu's. Because if it would have been a distorted view, then they wouldn't send their children to learn Torah in Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Evet. But the idea was that his understanding of monotheism did not progress as far as Avram Avinu. We'll speak pretty soon what it was. And it Avram Avinu's was enough to say that he was the first father of Klal Yisrael. Now, it says here also, Behu Kohen, if you notice the expression, Behu Kohen in sentence 18, that Malchizedek was a priest, Lekeil Elyon, for the Most High God. So the rabbis note on the word Behu, that he was a priest, but his children would not be Kohanim. Here again the question comes up, what do you mean his children would not be Kohanim? Avram Avinu was a descendant of Shem ben Noach, and Yaakov and all the children of Avram, down to Aaron HaKohen in a sense, was also from Shem. So the child was a Kohen. Why does it say he will be a Kohen and his children will not be Kohanim? So it says here, because he mentioned Avram's name before God, he said, Boruch Avram, Lekeil Elyon, blessed is Avram, Lekeil Elyon, to the God above, Kone, who owns heaven and earth. So it says, Hikdim, the fact that he mentioned Avram's name before God's name, therefore it was like a flaw, and he was destined not to be the Kohen. So let's analyze both aspects of it. The fact was that he was destined not to be a Kohen. The way we're questioning, he was a Kohen. It wasn't him, so it was his grandchildren. The answer is, where did the source of the kahuna come from? That means the same as Shem not being the father of the Jewish people. Where did the source come from? The source of the priesthood, can it be traced back, the germ, the kernel, can it be traced back, the gene, to Avram Avinu? And that's where it starts from? Or can it continue from Avram Avinu back to Shem ben Noach? So the Chazal tell us that Shem ben Noach forfeited his ability with his conception of God here, forfeited his ability to be the priest in the future. And therefore, when there will be a priesthood, the strength, we'll say, and the origin of that priesthood will be traced back to Avram Avinu rather than back to Shem ben Noach. Why? Because spiritually, the idea is the father or the source of it is a question of he possesses that spiritual strength. Now, we've been saying, what is the basic distinction between both of them? Well, Hirsch, the way Hirsch learns it, I had my own way, but Hirsch learns it a little bit different, and I want to precede Hirsch's idea. Hirsch says here that Shem ben Noach felt that the Kael Elyon, as he says in verse 19, was Koneh Shamayim V'Oretz. That means God, everything in heaven and earth, which was created, belongs to God. So that means that if something created does not have any free will, the heavens, the stars, the celestial bodies, so they obey God, they're guided and they're ruled by Him. Because when God made their orbit, or He made their destiny, and they are guided and ruled by God. So this assumption is the sense that the whole universe has to pay God homage. And this is something new. It means that the others, powers of, that were created, naturally pay homage to God. But the human being, man, out of his own free will, out of his own free will, is also supposed to live solely in God's service. Now, we appreciate that. That's a good interpretation of monotheism and perhaps man's obligation to his creator. So we'll say, fine, this is true monotheism. What did Avram add over Malkitzedek? So actually, if you look at Avram's words, when he speaks to Melech's Dome in sentence 22, in verse 22, he says, Harimosi Yodi. Avram says in verse 22, I have lifted up my hand, El Hashem, Yud Kei Vov Kei, Kael Elyon, Kone Shemayim V'Oretz. Now he uses the same expressions, Kael Elyon, the God above, who acquired, who possesses the owner of heaven and earth. He put in an extra word, Yud Kei Vov Kei. What is this Yud Kei Vov Kei? That's the unique thing of Yud Kei Vov Kei, the personal God that is involved with each act of the individual. The way Hirsch says, Avram adds the name of Hashem, which is the most characteristic name of God. Avram's victory only convinced Malkitzedek that the highest God was in relationship to man's effort and man's doings. That means that man had to answer like to that God, but that this is the God of history, right? That Hashem's greatest work was not in the past, in a sense, but in the future. He is the creator of the future. So Avram said, the God whom your priest just mentioned is a God in whose service, consciously or unconsciously. So the main idea is really unconsciously. According to Malkitzedek, the way he interpreted, man has to serve God, just like nature serves God. Naturally, man should make the choice to serve God. But it means if man doesn't choose to serve this God, so God doesn't really have any effect over this man. Avram Avinu added the idea that God was the God of history, and man really serves God consciously or unconsciously. Pharaoh didn't believe he was serving God when he enslaved the Jewish people. He denied recognition of God. Nebuchadnezzar didn't believe that he was serving God. Yet God speaks of Nebuchadnezzar and he calls him Avdi, my servant. Because although these people believe in mikra, in perchance happenings, there is no such thing as perchance happenings. Even the unconscious, subconscious, and everything else is a service of Yud Kei Vov Kei because he's concerned in everything. So this was the lesson that Avram Avinu added. So in a sense, when you're a priest to a God, the question is, to which God are you a priest? So he couldn't serve Malkitzedek as the priest to this God because he didn't have the true conception of what the God is in order that you should bring mankind ultimately to that belief. Yet his knowledge of God was not such that it would deter, we'll say, Avram, this is one thing that troubled me for years. I mean, so how was Yaakov able to study by him? I'm not going to go send my son to study in a school where there's questions in their theology and in their belief. But the question is that if the Malkitzedek's belief, in a sense, was not contradictory, the only thing was his perception, his conception of what God does or what God demands did not progress as far as Avram Avinu's. So in a sense, it wasn't an open contradiction to what Avram Avinu felt. Avram Avinu was still learning. Avram Avinu progressed. For example, when you have Avram Avinu coming back from Egypt, when he was saved, that he came back from Egypt. So it says there that after they came back, that he is going to the place of the altar that he had originally made, Vayikra Sham Avram B'Shem Hashem, and Avram pronounced God's name there. Now, which altar is he referring to? He's referring to the first altar where in chapter 12, when Avram finally stopped at a certain place where God appeared to him in a vision. So it said in chapter 12, sentence 8, Avram built an altar and he pronounced the name of God. What is the idea of pronouncing the name of God? He taught the name of God. He taught the name of God. We find this by the Avos, by the fathers, throughout our progenitors, throughout Bereshis. They built an altar, they pronounced the name of God. So literally it means that this was a place, a religious edifice or a religious symbol or whatever. It gave them an opportunity to expound on their belief in God. Now on this sentence 4 that I just quoted, when they came back from Egypt, and it says there that Avram pronounced God's name, so Rashi says there are two interpretations to passage 4. If you notice, it can be read that he returned to the place of the altar that he had originally created, and he had originally pronounced the name of God. But Rashi brings down interpretation, and he anew pronounced the name of God. What does this mean, he anew pronounced the name of God? Because Chaza Vikore B'Shem Hashem, the idea is that he received a new perception of God during the instant in Mitzrayim. In a sense, Mitzrayim was a test of Avram. God tested Avram, as we'll speak shortly, but Avram also, can't say the word, tested God, but received a further understanding of the details that God intervenes in the life of an individual. That Avram found himself in a difficult situation, but Avram Avinu realized that God guards, consciously, subconsciously, what a person does, God guards him. And even under this circumstance in Egypt, he was guarded. Now, God didn't tell him to go to Egypt. It says there was a hunger in the land, and Avram went down into Egypt. Now, God didn't tell him to go to Egypt. Now, in fact, we've mentioned in the past, was Avram proper, doing the proper thing to go to Egypt? The Ramban says he shouldn't have gone. There was a hunger. God could feed him in Israel. He shouldn't have gone to Egypt. Then he shouldn't have endangered his wife, Sarah. Hirsch differs. But even if we'll say that he did wrong, and Sarah did end up in a difficult situation, if you look at it from the Ramban's view, yet God, Shemer Nafshes Chasidov, in a sense, God intervened in a miraculous way and saved both Sarah and Avram. So don't forget, in Avram's life, this was one of the first lessons of God conducting the daily affairs of man and intervening in history. So when he had this perception, obviously, what do? You pronounce this perception. I mean, if you tell this story, whenever we hear someone come back to us and tell us a mephist that this tzaddik did this and this gadol did this, in a sense, it strengthens our belief in the hereafter, what you call in the Hashoras HaNefesh and in tzaddikim, and we tell the next person, did you hear this event? In a sense, by sharing with him, we try to communicate and also to proclaim our belief. So you can appreciate when Avram Avinu came back and he had this new understanding of a miracle. So Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, this was his further conception and understanding of God. So when Avram, as he was going through the earliest years of his life, he saw and realized that much stronger what the Shem Hashem was. Yitzchak also had that. I mean, all of the Avos, they had to go through this in order to build up really the Shem Hashem. So this was the Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. This was the Vayikra B'Shem Hashem that Avram proclaimed. And therefore, to be the spiritual leader of mankind, you had to have this understanding in the name of God. Shem ben Noach did not possess this understanding. Now, when you think back, you know, we always look at it. We never really think into it. We're dealing with generations. Avram Avinu, there's another view of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was the first person who recognized God, which really is not true. Because you have to realize that Noach was living through part of this time. And Shem was living in this time. And they surely knew God. So if they knew God, So what was the significance of Avraham Avinu? They had their schools there. So from the Rambam, it seems, when he discusses in the laws of Aveda Zara, that Avraham Avinu's part was that he was a missionary, that he went to expound to people, to teach people, and so on, which can be very true. But the way we've built it up, and the way it's clear from the passages, that it was more than that. That was the part of teaching. But there was also the contribution that Avraham Avinu made in the theology, we'll say, of monotheism, in the belief of monotheism. If it would have just been the question of teaching, then we can't say that he can't be descending from Shem. I mean, so this is a bigger missionary, a lesser missionary, but they're teaching the same thing. But it seems that in addition to the actual teaching, there was also some basic theological differences in doctrine between both of them. Although, as I pointed out, it wasn't heresy to the degree that he wouldn't send his child to learn there, because there was nothing heretical about it. It was just not the understanding of the perception, which by Avram kept on building up as he moved through life, and they hadn't achieved this yet. So that was basically the difference from Avram's progenitors, and why Avram was chosen to be the source of Bal Yisrael, both as the father and also as the priest of man. We'll go back to the beginning. The end of the previous chapter, it says, Terach took his son Avram and Lot and Sarai, the wife of Avram, and they went out Meur Kasdim. They went out from Ur Kasdim to go towards Canaan. They came to Choron, and they dwelt in Choron. Now, there's a big discussion among the commentaries. Where was the birthplace of Avram? There are some that say that Avram's birthplace, I think it's Ibn Ezra that says that Avram's birthplace was actually in Ur Kasdim. Ibn Ezra says, based on this verse, it seems that Avram's birthplace was in Ur Kasdim. That's where Oren died. And then Hashem's command came, go to the land where I will show you. And this command, according to him, had to take place, the Lech Lecha that we have here in this passage in 12:1, had to take place before they left Ur Kasdim. And it says there that if he was born in Ur Kasdim and God told him Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, so it seems, according to the Ibn Ezra, it took place when they were still in Ur Kasdim and his father set out with him. So therefore it mentioned the father took him. And Avram continued on his own. The father came to Chor and Avram continued on his own. Now, we say that Ur Kasdim is not where Avram was born. But what it means, Ur Kasdim was the fire that Avram was cast into. There is that famous medrash. But the Ramban differs with the Ibn Ezra, and he says it can't be that he was born in Kasdim, because according to that, it would come out that Avram was not born in the land belonging to Shem, but in the land belonging to Chum, because Kasdim is in the land of Chum, yet the Torah always relates Avram to the land of Shem. He's called Avram Ha'ivri, not Avram HaKasdi. Avram HaKasdi is different. And also, we always quote the verse Be'ever Hanor in the Agoda. Our father sat time previous, took Avram away from the Be'ever Hanor across the river. Also, the Ramban says, when Avram sent Eliezer to bring Rivka, he said to her, go to my land and my birthplace. So we know that Aram Naharaim was his birthplace, because that's where Eliezer went, and not Kasdim. So for these many reasons, the Ramban differs with the Ibn Ezra. But the interesting point is, according to the Ibn Ezra, the event taking place in chapter 12, verse 1, precedes the event taking place in verse 31 of chapter 11. And means that Avram was told, Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, which according to the Ibn Ezra meant from Kasdim. So then Terach, his father, went along with him. And when they came to Choron, Terach remained in Choron, and Avram continued on his journey. Whereas according to the Ramban, they're really not related. Avram happened to be born in Choron. They went to Ur Kasdim on a trip or whatever. Then they went back from Ur Kasdim to Choron. Once he was back in Choron, then God appears to him in the beginning of this chapter and tells him to leave his father's house. Now, just as a note, Avram, we know, left his father, What happened with his father? So the Chazal tell us later, speaks to Avram, and it mentions, you will come unto your father, b'shalom, in peace. Meaning when you die, the troubles that God had forecast, which we'll speak later perhaps, about the future of the children of Israel, will not affect you in your lifetime. You will come to your fathers in peace. So Rashi says, the fact that it says, you will come to your fathers in peace, it must mean that Terach did tshuva. Terach did tshuva, because otherwise, what kind of a prediction was this, or what kind of a blessing, or he was trying to assuage his fears? You'll come to your father. The father didn't do tshuva. The father was an idolater. So when you think about the hashpoa from one person of another, all the people recognized Avram, and he had many people that he had a direct influence on, and he was able to move them away from idolatry. Yet his father, he says, when as long as he was living, the father, and when they were together, he couldn't have any great influence on the father. But later, the father, after Avram had left the father, so then the father, he did tshuva. So it's something that we could never know what can cause, we'll say, a return. Sometimes you could have a child doing tshuva, or a man doing tshuva, living with his parents, and you would think that it has no effect at all, because they still continue in their ways. Yet, and people would wonder, you know, he's effective in everybody else, but like in his own family, he wasn't able to have any effect. But you don't give up, because eventually, and we see this from true life, that eventually the seeds that he planted, even in his own family, at the end, they bear fruit. And he makes this note, and Ator Tove Elav Asech B'Shalom, Terach, who didn't want to go and remained an idolater, at the end he did tshuva even after Avram Avinu left him. So it says that Avram listened to Hashem.
Now this itself, that Avram went, was a great thing.
Why did he go in this way? It says, go from your land to the land that I will show you. So normally you would wait till he shows you where to go. So it seems that Avram went. Why did he go to this direction? Why didn't he go to the other direction? But he went towards Canaan, because Canaan already had its background, its reputation, we'll say. First of all, the way we're speaking, you had Malkitzedek Melech Sholem in the city of Yerushalayim. You had Malkitzedek there, and he was preaching the belief in the true God. So in a sense, the people there were not that foreign, like we're saying before, to the idea of monotheism. They weren't so involved in idolatry as the people in Evel Anar or the Kazdim, because they had Malkitzedek, they had Shem, they had the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. Shem Ve'ever settled there, because we could also appreciate that, because Noach built his Mizbeach and his altar, he built in Har Maria, according to Chazal. So therefore, that was the holy place. And according to a strong opinion, the Mabul did not affect Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was not harmed by the Mabul, that land. So if the land itself was not harmed by the Mabul. So we could appreciate that that had a certain spiritual life to the land. The land of Israel in general has a spiritual life to it. Now, we could appreciate that when we go to Eretz Yisrael, when we visit or we go to Yerushalayim somehow, or even the children, they go, you know, we feel a certain impact that Yerushalayim has made and that Eretz Yisrael makes on the person.